Paul Tonko, talk to me about the Volkswagen scandal. Now, you're a superb environmentalist. You played that role. You were the king of the environment when you were in the state legislature. You have played that role in Congress. Here comes Volkswagen. They're supposed to adhere to certain standards. Turns out they were cheating.
Yeah, it is pretty frustrating. And we had them before the Energy and Commerce Committee, on which I am placed. And just the answers were all just punting to Germany. You know, they had their spokesperson here for the American operation, mm-hmm. but they seemed to just use that as a veil of avoiding the real questions at hand. Point of the matter is, look, you sold people a car that was supposed to have a certain performance. That has not proven true. And my push on them was like, have you ever had, they blamed it on some software engineers within the company that pulled this little plot off. I said, look, have you ever had this before? And they claimed in the 70s, late 70s, they did. And I said, were there any oversight or regulatory principles you put into play? Did you restructure, reformat? And they really were not responding to the question. And so we have a number of responses to questions that people were asking in this committee that we're looking forward to getting. But it becomes very apparent that the culture was one that did not serve the consumer well. And I quizzed them not only on the failure there of selling someone a car that failed to meet the expectations, rightful expectations of the purchaser, but then now what are you going to do about rectifying this situation, and what are you going to do about the resale value? Because if this isn't addressed appropriately, the resale value here, along with buying a car that didn't meet up to what it was advertised to be, are egregious as it comes down to the consumer.
And then, of course, there's that final small question as to what the hell they're doing to the environment when they lie that way.
Absolutely. So it was very disconcerting to see the sort of lack of information exchange. And I think that there's going to be, I hope, and I will do my best to make an aggressive search for answers and solutions that are required.
Okay, I get more mail about pipelines than anything else. People call me all the time. They yell at me. They say we're not doing enough when we've had more stuff on the air than anybody else has on the subject. They say, you never have anything on the air. And that, of course, is not true. It just goes to show you, not that they're bad people, but that they're so concerned about it that they'll even make stuff up. And I'm wondering whether you're getting the same kind of response that we are.
Well, we get a lot of questions and concern expressed about the pipelines. We just recently did an energy bill in the Energy and Commerce Committee, which I didn't think was nearly strong enough. It was supposed to have investments in the grid and all sorts of improvements on energy efficiency, and it fell far short. But one of the amendments I attempted to make before we took a vote on the bill itself was to offer additional scrutiny and additional opportunity to consumer groups and to communities at large that are to become a donor area, so to speak, mm-hmm. for pipelines. And that was rejected. We attempted very hard to, in a very deliberate way, to get a more fair outcome, and that was rejected. But, you know, it's an infrastructure that needs, that's of high need. We have energy reforms that are required, but there has to be a sounder path and a decision process that enables us to hear the many remarks that people want to share with proposed lines, which sometimes can go through some of the most delicate territory.
John Boehner, the Republican Speaker, has announced he's leaving, of course, and that has set up this sort of replacement issue. And nobody seems to want to be Speaker except some of the more, well, it's a word you used before, extremist types. And are you all enjoying that spectacle while they, on the Democratic side?
Well, it's a bit of history developing before your very eyes, but, you know, it's not good for America. We have so much unfinished business. We have the reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act that the Supreme Court has charged Congress with doing. We have the Export-Import Bank reauthorization. We have infrastructure, the Federal Highway and Transit Trust Fund that needs to be approved by Congress, and the list goes on and on. Investments with healthcare through the 21st Century Cures Act, a number of things that need to be done. But without a speaker, Alan, we're at, you know, we're, it's a paralysis of sorts that comes onto the House. And it's not just the management, the stewardship of the House. We're talking about, you know, a very key figure in line to succeed a president. So for the sake of stability for the nation, we need to name a speaker. Now, it's interesting, in all of this debate and all of this struggle, you know, the information has been circulating that you don't need to be a seated member of the House to be elected speaker.
Yeah, so if there's
an application you want me to carry down to Washington, we'll be happy to carry that.
You mean, are you offering me the seat?
I can't pledge it to you because I'm one of 435, but I'm offering to take the application.
Well, I might be interested. So my question to you then is, talk to me a little bit about Afghanistan. Now, the president has changed his mind. He wanted everybody out. Now we're going to leave 5,000 troops in. I try to put myself in his place, and I'm sitting there and saying, well, if it falls, it's going to be on my plate that it fell if I don't keep those troops in there. But on the other hand, I want them out.
Well, you know, we have spent trillions on war in the Mideast, and we began by chasing the wrong enemy. And it's just been mistake upon mistake. It's very difficult to get some of these groups to pick up and invest. I think providing dollars for, you know, stabilizing the general populace of these countries is important so that there can be sound decisions made in how they elect, hopefully, a democratic regime. But beyond that, you know, offering our advice, helping train their troops has got to be where we're at. And I think that pledge needs to be taken to the nth degree. We need to help train their troops, but it's time to bring our daughters and sons home. I think that the carnage that we've witnessed and the price tag has been tremendous. I think our taxpayers are exhausted and our military is exhausted. And we need to re-strategize. And, you know, this longest running war in our nation's history has got to come to an end.
It's easy to say, but if you were him, you probably would have made the same decision.
Well, you know, we're all going to be briefed by military intelligence and given somewhat of an update on perhaps tweaking of the strategy. But again, I think the major statement of just not that long ago was train the troops, help stabilize the people, and move on. And now we're swaying from that. And I think that...
Well, what if they're untrainable?
Well, then that proves the mission to be that much more impossible, and it's just going to exhaust our economy. You know, I sit every day and take concerns from people, from mental health to transportation needs to water sewer infrastructure. We need to invest in our own people. And this has been, you know, denied or delayed, at least, for far too long while we have spent trillions on wars that just don't seem to have the partnership that we need with those rivaling nations and with our allies. Our allies need to step up to the plate, too.
Well, Tonko, always wonderful to have you come in and talk to us. I know you always talk from the heart. You always say what you think. You're not a BSer, and we appreciate that very much.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on the show.